Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of July, 2015. Welcome to episode 2 of our 3-episode test market for this product concept. And that concept is just to have a brief chat about what comics I read last month. Or to be more technical, more accurate, more picky about it. And if you're listening to this, you're a geek, so you understand technical, accurate, and picky. These are the comics that were listed on the What I Read blog posts that hit in the 4 Saturdays of July. Those blog posts are at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost or link to them on Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. And I don't think those are spoilers for this podcast, since those are just lists, and here there's a little bit of discussion. But first, a little feedback. And the response to the first episode was pretty positive. Thanks for that. I really do appreciate it. Except for Ryan Daly, host of Flowers and Fishnets and the Secret Origins podcast. I just listened to the first episode of your comics reading journal, and it was so awful. Just dreadful. Please, don't do any more than 3 of these episodes. In fact, if it's not a bother, don't release the next 2. Okay, just kidding. I really enjoyed the show. It was a nice, concise little overview of new and not-so-new comics. Some I've read, some I haven't, so I liked it a lot. I'm looking forward to more. I'm guessing that that second paragraph Ryan just added after remembering that he's asked me to guest on an upcoming Secret Origins episode. Chris, from Mythmaking ETC and the Geek Brunch Retrocast podcast, wrote in that he enjoyed the show, even if it's just an annual summers-only project. I had not thought of that as an option, but it's pretty good. He said that he was interested about our discovery of Gotham by Midnight. I think of this as the Avengers approach. Marvel has cashed in on the popularity of the team by putting their name on books that might have been called something else in a different era. DC is doing that with Batman. It seems to work, so I can't blame them, even if it's a bit annoying to those of us who appreciate variety. But it is a great series, and I'm glad it made the cut to continue post-convergence. So were we, Chris, and I will be talking about Gotham by Midnight in just a few minutes. I also agree with your observation about the structure of Wade's Daredevil. It's an approach I really enjoy. Episodic installments from which a larger narrative emerges. Another great example of this approach is Ed Brubaker's stint on Catwoman, which happens to have a similar visual style to Daredevil. Cheers to you from a funny book fan, Chris. I have read some of Brubaker's Catwoman and hadn't made that connection, but that's a good point, Chris. Thanks. I also heard from longtime friend of the network, Michael Bradley, of Parallel Lines, Superman and Batman, and back in the day, The Thrilling Adventures of Superman. Alan, I saw the latest offering from Relatively Geeky on the podcast Spinner Rack. What's this, I asked, to no one in particular, except my dog, who just huffed and walked out of the room for interrupting his daily 23-hour nap. A new number one? I was worried. Is this a line-wide event, an all-new, all-different Relatively Geeky? A reboot of our much-beloved podcasts? Will Professor Allen now be younger, hipper, and angrier? Will Emily be sporting armor and a collar? What about that episode of Short Box Showcase co-starring everyone's favorite Superman and Batman host? Is that still in continuity? Do I even still exist? Or have I been replaced by a sassy pants robot? First of all, Michael, I firmly believe that you still exist. Also, we already have a younger, hipper, and angrier Professor Allen. You all may know her as Emily. And, Michael, maybe you just need to calm down. Okay, Michael, calm down, I told myself. Breathe. It'll be okay. See? Thankfully, as I learned that this is not a reboot, but an addition to the already stellar offerings from the Relatively Geeky Network. Nothing's been purged from the continuity of the hosts, except maybe that episode was Shag, but let's face it, he had it coming. And since it was priced at my favorite price point, free! As it turns out, the Comic Book Reading Journal is a welcome addition. It adds an even more personal touch to the network. Lots of podcasts feature the host talking about comic books he or she has read. An approach offering present thoughts on books currently on the reading list is a different kind of personal. Billy Hogan did something similar a few years ago at his site in between episodes. I also did something similar in blog form called The Stack during all of 2011 at greatkrypton.com. It's fun getting mini reviews and off-the-cuff thoughts on books in these types of shows and blog posts, and a monthly format works well. Looking forward to the next one, Michael. P.S. I had to pass on the foil-embossed, die-cut, Alex Ross-painted, retailer-exclusive, one-in-a-thousand variant cover. But if I ever see it in the podcast quarter bin, Michael, believe me, this is an offer just for you. I am willing to sell all of my back-issue podcasts for just 25 cents each. You know, Facebook message me for the PayPal account, all right, buddy? Thanks. On the Facebook post for the episode, Zeb Oswald, Chris Ouellette, Chris Ivey, and Daniel Butcher all said nice things about the episode, and Chris Ivey, Ed Moore, and Manuel Carmona all shared the Facebook link for that episode. I did want to give specifically a nod to Ron Sadowski. You probably know him as the heart of the Dinner for Geeks podcast. He had some legitimate constructive feedback, some of which I'll adopt, some of which I'm considering, and all of which I take seriously. Stephen J. Rogers made a couple of similar comments, so I'm considering an adjustment for two if we move forward with the show. Again, to everyone, thanks. On to the books I read last month. As I did last episode, I'm categorizing the books that I'll cover here. And first are the issues that I read specifically for podcast appearances. The homework books, I'm calling them now. The Question, Annual Number 2. That issue is covered in Short Box 37, which was the network's second anniversary episode. Go listen to that to hear what we thought about it. Spoiler, it guest starred Green Arrow, and Batman makes a brief cameo. Now, when we were deciding which book we'd cover for that anniversary, I grabbed a handful of annuals from the collection, and one of those was The Maze Agency Annual 1. And this was one of my favorite independents from the late 80s, early 90s. I enjoy mysteries, detective stories, and this is one of the best comic efforts in that genre. Mike W. Barr did all the writing, and Adam Hughes is not in this issue, but the series does have some of his earliest work in the industry. So although technically this was not for a podcast, it almost was, and I did read it, so I'll allow it here. And Shogun Warriors 19. This was for an upcoming appearance on Earth Destruction Directive. Luke, Jack, and Eddie and I have not recorded it yet. Schedules have been hard to coordinate with my summer schedule, being quite different from his and his family's summer schedule. But, fingers crossed, we'll be recording soon, and then you'll be listening to it soon. Next are the current books Emily and I are picking up as they come off the shelves. And as new as these books are, I won't get too spoilery, but if you don't want to know anything about a particular issue, you know, skip ahead 30 or 45 seconds when I get to that one. So we have Constantine the Hellblazer 2, and poor John Constantine, he, you know, does not have a lot of friends, and those that he does have tend to be dead, hanging around him as ghosts. But the impossible is happening now, and the ghosts are being killed. And Johnny Boy has no idea how, and no idea why. I like that this title, I think, is getting off to a pretty strong start. Another one getting off to a strong start is Starfire. We picked up Starfire 2 last month, another fun issue. Starfire versus a hurricane, doing superheroics and meeting more of the crazy Key West community, and their implications that there is more in store for the future for Starfire than just battling just nature. There was a really, really big footprint discovered at the end of this issue. So we know something is coming or something has already arrived. And then mentioned before, Gotham by Midnight. We had actually missed a prior issue, so this month we read issues 5, 6, and 7. And issue 5 ended the first arc. That was the last issue before the Convergence hiatus. And there was drama, there was tragedy, there was a change in the status quo. It was good. And then issue 6 was more of a standalone and probably designed as a reentry point for people who discovered the title in the Convergence previews, which is pretty much what Emily and I did. And then issue 7 sort of kicks off the next full arc. And did want to mention that the art changed at that point from Ben Temple Smith's totally spooky Silent Hill style to Juan Ferreira, who still brings a solid horror book to the look, but it is a step or two closer to reality, or at least a step or two closer to standard comic book art. The coloring is especially good as well, a nice muted green-blue-purple palette with the occasional orange to change the pace. And I'm loving the premise of this series, which is Detective Jim Corrigan and a team of paranormal investigators. And it wasn't until issue 4 that he really spectered out. And then the following issues explored exactly what that means, what the implications are, and what that does to Corrigan. And then the specter did show up in issue 7 as well. But they really need to keep that in reserve, I think, not bring out the big gun too often. Another way to think about Gotham by Midnight is that it's a book that seems very similar to the X-Files, even to the point where they are threatening to shut down the unit here at this point. The other big difference, of course, is that Mulder never actually possessed the power of the wrath of God. I really just want this book to stay good. It's so different and interesting and up my alley. At this point, I need to turn my attention to the north, towards Canada. I want to talk for a little bit about the Comics Corps of Canada, a great volunteer effort up there of cosplayers who visit hospitals to deliver comic books to sick kids. I dare you to try to come up with a better, geekier way to serve, to give back, to do good works. For more info, check out their Facebook page, Comics Corps of Canada. Corps is spelled like the military term, C-O-R-P-S, Comics Corps of Canada. I sent them a care package a few months ago of duplicates and reading copies of books that I thought, you know, might be content and age appropriate. And I decided at that point that every time I ran into cheap bins, I would buy at least one book simply to send to the Comics Corps, something kid-friendly or all ages, or at least kid-appropriate. And recently I picked up from a discount bin at Half Price Books Superman Adventures 6. What a fun read, obviously a family or all-ages book. Love the way that Ma and Pa Kent were presented as well. Great read, and now it's in the Send to Canada pile. And when that pile gets to a couple dozen books, I'll box them and send them up. Another one for that stack is a coverless copy I picked up of Bugs Bunny 142. One of the stores near here has some old, you know, sort of reading copies, coverless copies of books from the late 60s into the mid-70s, and they just throw 25 cents on them. And though their cheap bins include some kid humor books like this. Now, I heard about the Comics Corps from good Canadian listener Rob Lance, whose LCS, the Comics Connection, regularly donates. And Rob also occasionally packs up a care package for me and Emily. And the most recent package we got from him included an old copy of DC Superstars 3. It's a Legion issue that I remember reading at my aunt's house multiple times every summer growing up. That one was a great story, a reprint and a modern sequel or follow-up. Great issue, really enjoyed it, and I put it in the Send Back to Canada pile. That package we got from Rob also had All-Star Squadron 15 and Karate Kid 15, which I also read. All-Star Squadron was, of course, very solid. And the Karate Kid issue was, not surprisingly, more than a little bit wacky. There was some time wonkiness happening, you know, 30th century Legionnaire back in the 20th century, and then he ends up in Commandy's world. So, yeah, a little wacky. And then, just for a miscellaneous read, I grabbed a copy of Mark Spector Moon Knight number 9 from the stack and read that. It's a Chuck Dixon story that guest stars the Punisher. I'm not really a Punisher guy myself. I'm embarrassed to say that I'm actually more of a Moon Knight fan. That's why I bought the book. Don't judge me! I think I need to go put myself in comic book timeout for a minute or two, just for having read much more Moon Knight than I have Punisher. So let's take a break here, play a promo or two for podcasts that are almost as good as what we have here at Relatively Geeky. And when we come back, we'll talk giveaways, graphic novels, and trade paperbacks.
A secret governmental organization operating behind the scenes. Task Force X.
Task Force X is an off-the-books government strike team, made up of convicts with no hope for release, serving as expendable agents for impossible missions. Succeed, and I'll shave time off your sentences.
If we don't,
you'll be dead. Any other stupid questions?
The Suicide Squad, ran by Amanda Waller.
I'm Amanda Waller. I'm here to indoctrinate you convicts into our special forces.
And there's Checkmate, ran by Harry Stein. This is the tales of DC Comics, Suicide Squad, and Checkmate. Mostly monthly from Headspeaks. Available on iTunes under Task Force X and under Headcasts over at headspeaks.com. We can also be found on Facebook and Google Plus under Task Force X. Task Force X. Check it out, or you'll answer to the wall.
Nobody screws the wall!
And we're back. I need to start with a shout-out to my good buddies at the Ragman Facebook page. It's Ragman-DC Comics. That's the page. They ran a little contest earlier in the month, and I was the lucky random winner. And I am now the proud owner of a majority of their Tattered Amalians titled appearances. They sent, and I read, the 1976 Ragman series, which went 5 issues. It was mostly a street-level battle against societal woes and general injustice. I really like this version of the DC Bronze Age books, just moving into the DC Explosion era, and I know technically that's 1978, but those 3 or 4 years before that, when so many books were tried, Black Lightning and Shade and Cobra, Freedom Fighters, Ragman, Karate Kid, we mentioned before, you can say that the only real success from this era of creating new books leading up into the explosion may have been Warlord. But there was so much crazy stuff being tried. I really appreciate those 2 or 3 or 4 years. I also received from them and read the 1991 miniseries, 8 issues that retconned the origin of Ragman into an embodiment of the Jewish Golem legend, turning Irish Junkman Jerry Regan from the 70s series into Jerzy Reganovich. And this is where we get the notion that the suit is made up of the souls of the dead. It's a really interesting story. Great Pat Broderick art. The entire 8-issue series had just 2 different panel layouts. Well over 90, probably 95% of the pages were 9-panel grids, punctuated a couple times an issue with full-page splashes. And because of the repetitive nature of most of those pages, those splashes really stand out. It was just a really interesting design choice. The story took place in Gotham, So, of course, there was a confrontation with Batman toward the end of the series. Again, very interesting stuff. These 13 issues of Ragman went straight into my long boxes. For anyone interested in more Ragman info, check out Little Chad Bokelman's blog for the character, thesuitofsouls.blogspot.com. And then there's the one volume of manga that I read. Don't judge me! That manga was Liberty Vocational Volume 1, titled Will Supervillains Be on the Final? Written by novelist Naomi Novik. She's the author of one of my favorite novel series, an alternate history series featuring a dragon named Temeraire. So I thought I'd give it a shot because of the writer. And it's pretty much a Harry Potter for the superhero set, or think of it as Xavier School as a young adult novel. It was pretty fun. I will mention another trade I recently read, the first 6 issues of Gotham Academy, which is a pretty similar concept. I talked about this with Emily on Short Box 36. I won't go into too much details here. But the upshot is, I liked this one, the Liberty Vocational, Will Supervillains Be on the Final, a lot more than Gotham Academy. Which was okay, but this one was better. I also picked up and read an original OGN, a volume based on a short story by the Western writer Louis L'Amour. This was a black and white book called Law of the Desert Born. Westerns are generally not my thing, but I thought this was pretty good. It was a really interesting take on the Western. Again, obviously a genre that L'Amour was a master of. But in this one, there's no real bad guy. Just people acting out what they think is the right thing. And boy, does a lot of conflict arise when that's the case. And the volume also had a really good amount of back matter, talking about the son of Louis L'Amour and his efforts to get this story made into a movie. There was an audio version produced, and then this is the graphic novel. How all those versions differed, the different creative processes involved. It was really good stuff, it was this back matter that I think made this volume something I'd recommend. Law of the Desert Born. Look for it in your public library. I also read Ferrest 15 through 20. It's an offshoot from the Fables line. And I pretty much enjoy anything that the Willingham Fable Factory pumps out, even though I'm literally 3 or 4 years behind. In this storyline, Prince Charming ends up as the Maharaja, but his natural charm does not work on the warrior queen, Nalayani. It was a fun little adventure, and a female lead of color was a change of pace. Although, for a title that was supposed to feature the females of the Fables world, focusing primarily on Prince Charming and then secondarily on this other female character we'd never seen before, that did seem kind of odd. Again, a good story, but not totally sure that it fit here. I was at the library a bit ago and saw the collection of the 6-issue Paul Cornell mini Knight and Squire. And that Batmans of the World concept has long interested me. And I ran across those original stories from the 50s at some point in a reprint, Batman Family or something. And I've liked very much of what Paul Cornell has written, New 52 Demon Knights, jumping to mind. So I was really excited about this series. And it was okay. It was very British. I think it was intentionally over the top British. I really liked issue 1, which set the scene at some magical mystery pub, and also issue 3, in which a resurrected King Richard III thinks he needs to be in charge of England again. I really dug also the character of the Squire and her relationship with the knight. It was fun, but maybe a little tougher read and a little more inconsistent than I had hoped for. And then we end with the New 52 trades that I read, 2 Catwomans, covering a whole lot of comics, I have to say. Catwoman 19 through 34, Annual 1, a Dark Knight Villains Month issue and the Future's End issue were all in this two trades. No, maybe it was Forever Evil. No, I think it was Future's End. See, here's the problem. I did make a few notes for this podcast, and I just wrote F.E. Who would have known that DC would do two events with the same initials in such a short time frame? I think it was Future's End. Anyway, Anne Nesenti has been getting her feet under herself pretty well on this title after Judd Winnick did the first year or so of the title. And I was confused by the Gothtopia storyline that was in here, because that was part of a larger crossover with some other of the Bat books. So that was a little confusing. But other than that, I mostly enjoyed the stories. Especially the Joker's Daughter storyline. And then also the last storyline of this in these trades, the Race of Thieves storyline. That one just seemed like such a throwback. I was reminded of the 1976 Batman storyline that was like the Crime Olympics or the Gang Olympics or whatever it was. This is certainly not a clone of that story, but it had sort of the same feel back when comics were, you know, fun. And after the Joker's Daughter and some other dark stories, that was a mostly light, mostly fun change of pace. So I really like where that title is going. And finally, Animal Man 20 through 23 and Annual 2. I mentioned in the June journal that I've quite enjoyed New 52 Animal Man. That prior trade ended with a family cliffhanger and potential, sorry Andy Leyland, status quo change. And that did not change in this batch of stories. 4 months and no resolution, which is good. Yes, it's been a much shorter time in terms of the story time. But still, that's brave. That's bold. There's a real sadness, a real melancholy in these stories. And even though it's 2 years old, I'm again going to be a little spoiler avoidant, because I really like this story. And if you see it at the library, would encourage you to pick it up. So in addition to the family drama that is going on, sort of the underpinnings of these issues, Lemire also brings in a character to take on Buddy and his daughter Maxine and their position as avatars of the Red, of the Life Force. And that character was Brother Blood. And he really makes sense here. And he makes a pretty good case for why he should be in charge of the Red. Even though at first I thought it had come out of left field. But it does make sense, and plot-wise, that's where these issues wrap up. I said that I try not to do research for this show, that I wanted it to be a little more casual than other relatively geeky offerings, but I wanted to make sure that I got the artists for Animal Man right, because they pull off something that is notoriously hard to do. They, and I mean Francis Portella and Steve Pugh, draw Buddy's daughter Maxine to look like a six-year-old, or however old she's supposed to be in the story. Her posture, her facial expressions, are not those of a small adult, which is very common in comics. She is so kid-like, and has also an awesome Animal Girl costume that really works for her. Excellent work that I just thought was worth mentioning. And yes, I know there's only one trade left as the title died at 29 issues, so I'll probably pick that up in the next month or two. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads for the month, I really liked that DC Superstars 3 with the Legion. That was really good. And I'm digging Gotham by Midnight, so probably those two would be the issues that bubbled up to the top of the list. So let me know what you think of this episode, the comics I talked about, as well as the concept of the show. We have one more episode coming in early September before the network bigwigs meet to decide if we get the full season order of episodes. And you can help make that decision with your feedback. Email can be sent to relativelygeeky@gmail.com. You can also post your thoughts in the comments section for the blog post for this episode or on the Relatively Geeky Facebook page post for the episode. Thanks again for listening. Keep the pages turning. That's still not good.